I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. After months of planning, Philadelphia is ready or not to greet Pope Francis, who arrives this weekend, plus the million or more of his followers who are expected to attend events in the city. Walking to work today, the streets and sidewalks were mostly deserted, an unusual and eerie experience. Our guest, WHYY's Katie Colinari, has been reporting on the city's preparation for the Pope's visit and the World Meeting of Families that began earlier this week. She's urban enterprise reporter for Newsworks and has joined us in the past talking about preparation for the Pope's visit, and joins us once again for kind of a down and dirty description of what's going to be happening in the city. And Katie, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here, Marty. Thanks.
It was a really eerie experience, wasn't it, walking to work today?
It really was. And it's funny, since Tuesday, we've just been watching the landscape of downtown Center City, Philadelphia, just change. At first, you know, you kind of see all the bike racks, and all of a sudden, all these porta potties appeared, and now we've got magnetometers and 8-foot-high fences. So things are really starting to take shape for the weekend.
And from what you know, and from your reporting, and from other reporters here at WHYY, is the city ready? Is everything pretty much in place as expected?
It seems that everything is kind of in place as expected, and in some ways unexpected. I think people weren't quite sure exactly when a lot of these barriers were going to start to go up. On Tuesday, I was out talking to some business owners and residents in the Center City area, and they said they were surprised to see that things were already in place. But I suppose, you know, that had to be expected because there's a lot of preparation to be done. And the mayor's administration, the Secret Service, is assuring us that they are ready. Nobody knows exactly how many people will show up. The Secret Service is planning for at least 300,000 in sort of those most secure ticketed areas for the big events on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway this weekend. But whoever else decides to, you know, get on a train or on a bus with their parish into the city, it's really anybody's guess how many will really come.
Well, the number originally was a million or maybe even 1.5 million. Do you know where that came from and what that guesstimate was about?
Right. So that number has been thrown out there by Mayor Michael Nutter and the papal event organizers with the World Meeting of Families. That's the Vatican-sponsored conference going on this week. That's the whole reason for Pope Francis' visit to America. That number came from them, and that's been thrown out there from, you know, really the beginning of a lot of this planning, especially in the last 6 months when it became clear that Pope Francis was coming to America. They say that that number is based on other papal visits to other cities around the world, especially the crowds that Pope Francis tends to draw because he is so popular. But Mayor Nutter has said over and over again, we really don't know how many people will show.
And there is a question about whether people got kind of scared away thinking about what it would take to actually get to some of these events.
Right. It's interesting. And we've actually been thinking through that in our newsroom. We've got some transportation reporters from Plan Philly who've been looking at, how many chartered buses are there coming from various locations? How many SEPTA tickets, the special papal rail passes, have been sold? How many are left, as kind of an indication of how many people may show up? And it's clear that it's in the hundreds of thousands. Also, if you look at the number of tickets for the papal events that have been given away, that sold within minutes. So it's clear that that people were eager to get those seats. It's really that extra 500,000 that's really unclear. Will people, you know, with the kind of TVs they have at home and the 24-hour coverage of the papal visit that we've seen, will people really want to venture out and be in those areas where they don't have a ticket and they know they're going to be far away just to be part of the crowd and part of the experience? Or are they just going to stay home?
Let me quickly reintroduce you. That's Katie Colinari. She's urban enterprise reporter for WHYY Newsworks. And we're talking about Philadelphia's preparation for the Pope's visit this weekend. And if you have any questions, call us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We're not looking for complaints. We're looking for any kinds of questions that you might have about how to navigate around the city. And also, let me send you to Newsworks' Pope in Philly site, full of really important, good logistical information about what's going to be happening in this city. But you can certainly join our conversation. Katie, if someone has a car and they live in Philadelphia, or they're thinking they might want to come to Philadelphia, would you talk them out of that?
I might, yes, because especially since at 10 o'clock tonight, A lot of the major highways around the city are going to be closed. 95 will stay open, so if you kind of want to bypass the city, you're good there. But a few of the ramps in and around Center City will be closed. But, you know, the Schuylkill Expressway, that's going to be closed starting at 10 o'clock.
From the, where to where, do you know?
I've got my cheat sheet here. So we've got 76 from 476 to 95 will be closed. 76 westbound from 95 to Route 1. 676 in both directions from I-76 to 95.
Wow.
The Ben Franklin Bridge will also close, so that main artery to and from South Jersey will be closed as well. So really, if you're trying to drive into the city for any of the papal events, you're going to hit literally a lot of roadblocks. So really your best bet is public transportation, and you will need a special SEPTA papal rail pass, especially if you're using regional rail to come in. But the good thing is SEPTA has thousands of those left. So if you show up at your station tomorrow morning, I mean, you may have a bit of a wait to get on a train, but you may have some luck just kind of on a spur of the moment trying to get into the city.
And is SEPTA going to have trains sort of lined up at each? I know they've designated certain rail stops along the regional rail. Will that, once a train fills up and takes off, will another train pull up and...
That's a good question. I'm actually not quite sure. I believe that is the case. There's sort of, you know, I believe the trains start running at 5:30 in the morning, and they'll just, you know, keep going. And once a train gets to the city and drops off passengers, it will come immediately back. They won't be taking anybody back out of the city. So everything's going to go one direction in the morning into the city, and then in the evening take everybody back out, because that's SEPTA's way of kind of keeping everything running smoothly in a way that we did not see when the Phillies won the World Series.
I guess they don't want to repeat that.
No.
Although winning a World Series would not be a bad thing. Walking, though, I mean, practical things, wear sneaks and good walking shoes.
Right, exactly.
You're going to walk.
Yeah, you're going to be walking a lot. The SEPTA has actually reopened some stations that had previously been closed, so that'll put you a little bit closer to what they're now calling the Francis Festival Grounds. That was originally known as the Traffic Box, although that seemed to freak some people out, so they've renamed it the Francis Festival Grounds. But even so, you're going to have to be prepared to walk at least a couple of miles when you're getting off the train to get to those areas around the parkway.
And there are several major events. One is happening not far from us here, where the Pope will be speaking, what, in front of Independence Hall or this area of the city?
Right. He will be speaking in front of Independence Hall using a lectern that was once used by Abraham Lincoln. That's going to be a very important speech on religious freedom and immigration. One of the archbishops that's very close to him, I've heard it reported, said that speech is expected to be kind of the sleeper of his American visit. That speech, you know, may end up being one of the most important things that he does when he's here in America. So I know that there are a lot of pilgrims who are planning marches, immigrants planning marches to that speech. So that actually may be an event that we might see some extra crowds who don't have tickets sort of crowding around the outside because of the importance of that speech.
And then there are also events along the parkway as well.
Right. So there are two big events on the parkway. Saturday night is the Festival of Families. That's when Aretha Franklin and Andrea Bocelli are going to have this big concert. Celebrating, that's sort of the marking the end of the World Meeting of Families conference that's gone on this week. And then Sunday will be the Papal Mass, which has been expected by many to be kind of the climax of his American visit and one of the biggest crowds.
And when you talk about what was referred to as the box, and I guess that just felt so confining. It's been rebranded. The idea is that within this there is greater or more security to get in and out.
Yeah, so the traffic box is sort of this larger, about 4.5 square mile area around Center City where starting at 10 o'clock tonight in certain areas, if you drive your car outside of these bounds, you will not be able to get back in. Some driving will be allowed within the traffic box, but then to just take a step back,
Sure. The
security for the papal visit, you can really think of it like three different concentric circles. There is the secure perimeter, which is the areas around the parkway, the area around Independence Mall, where the Pope will have his two big public outdoor events. And so those will be the most fenced in. That's where you're going to see the lines for magnetometers, and you're going to have bag searches and things like that. Then outside that secure perimeter is the secure vehicle perimeter, and that's this traffic box. That's what we're talking about with having to, once you leave that traffic box, you can't get back in. But there will be some driving allowed, and there will be bicycling allowed in that zone. So this has actually proved to be kind of a good thing in some ways for many bicyclists who are finding, you know, more open roads that they don't
less
usually
traffic
get.
That they have to contend with.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Cyclists are certainly very happy about
yes,
this.
Yes, right. They just can't get into that secure perimeter. Bikes will not be allowed through the magnetometers.
You've been doing some coverage of the World Meeting of Families. What did you learn? What were some of the things that these members obviously clearly very powerfully connected to their Pope.
Yeah, and most of the people that I asked, you know, when I said, why did you come to the World Meeting of Families? It wasn't to really be part of the World Meeting. It was to be able to be part of this experience and to see Pope Francis. I talked to these two lovely women from Zimbabwe. They traveled 13 hours on a plane, plus, you know, all the getting to and from the airport to be here. And they just were so excited to be able to see Pope Francis this weekend. I also talked to many families. You can see them walking around the Pennsylvania Convention Center, holding kids' hands and pushing strollers. Many, you know, whole families are here mm-hmm. with their children. Even though traveling with your kids to a big city is not easy, and a lot of them are staying not only for the conference but for the papal visit. And there were a few common themes. A lot of parents really wanted to come and be part of this to learn about how to raise children as Catholics in a secular society, how to get some support for that, give their children space to question their faith and to explore their faith, but not to be afraid to express their faith. And others also said that they wanted their kids to see that they are part of a larger church that's not just, you know, their community or their congregation, that they're part of a global church and meet kids and families from around the world.
Will there be protests? I was reading, I got some information from SNAP
yes.
That there will be some protests about clergy abuse.
Yes, there's going to be a vigil at 4 o'clock this afternoon with some sexual abuse survivors and their advocates. There are going to be, as I mentioned, immigration advocates out in full force this weekend, especially for that speech tomorrow. You're probably also going, we've already seen a lot of pro-life and abortion activists. There were alternative conferences held this week for the LGBTQI community who felt kind of left out of the World Meeting of Families. So this has been, and climate activists, you know, responding to the encyclical on both sides. And so this has really kind of been a moment for a lot of people with certain, you know, advocacy positions to kind of glom onto the papal visit and make their voices heard and hoping that Pope Francis will reach out to them or, you know, just to get noticed by the public.
There'll be a lot of press here and certainly a lot of foreign press as well. We're almost out of time here. Has anyone thought about Monday morning yet? No, it's
yes.
just Friday. But.
Yeah. So Monday, there are a few unknowns, but what we do know is at noon, the Ben Franklin Bridge will reopen. I believe the Philadelphia School District will still be out of school. Some businesses will not be opening till later in the morning. There will be no trash collection. As for when all those other major highways around the city will reopen, that's yet to be determined. Mm-hmm. The city has not yet said. I think they're waiting to see how many people are trying to get out of the city.
Well, Katie Colinari, thanks for all your reporting. Thanks for joining us once again on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. And she is an urban enterprise reporter for Newsworks. Again, check out Newsworks' Pope in Philly site for more information about the events this weekend. Also, this Saturday, there'll be a special one-hour edition of Newsworks Tonight that starts at 6 o'clock. And Sunday, WHYY goes live with special coverage at 3 o'clock, including the Mass led by Pope Francis on the Parkway. We have two guests waiting in the wings. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Very few public figures enjoy the popularity of Pope Francis these days. Just ask Congress about its ratings that barely make it into the double digits. According to the Pew Research Center, about 90% of American Catholics have a favorable view of the pontiff. Even a majority of non-Catholics hold the Pope in high regard. This is Pope Francis's first visit to the U.S., and he's making the most of his time here with a speech to a joint session of Congress yesterday, a speech to the U.N. today that's going on right now on a packed schedule of events in Philadelphia. In fact, 1 million people are expected in the city this weekend for a series of events capped off by a Mass on the Parkway at the Philadelphia Art Museum on Sunday afternoon. Today, what is the significance of Pope Francis's visit to the U.S., what to make of his papacy and his pronouncement? announcements. And we have two guests who have joined us. Emma Green is the managing editor of TheAtlantic.com, where she writes about religion, culture, and politics. And she has been following Pope Francis's visit to the U.S. And Emma Green, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Kevin Hughes. He's a Catholic historical theologian at Villanova University, currently serves as chair of the Department of Humanities, the author of a number of books. And Kevin Hughes, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well. I don't think we have him quite yet. We'll get him up. Kevin Hughes?
Yeah, I'm here.
Very good. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Kevin, are you surprised by the outpouring of enthusiasm and what appears to be love and affection for this pope?
I'm not at all surprised. I think that from the very moment Pope Francis walked out onto the balcony at St. Peter's when his election was announced, and he bowed his head to ask for the prayers of the people around the world, I think that he captured the imagination in a very powerful way right there. And I think that, that sort of fascination and delight has really continued since.
Emma, what I find so interesting and such a contrast, because we are in a political season when rhetoric tends to turn into vitriol, that what the Pope says, whether one's a Catholic or not, whether one believes in the Catholic Church or not, but what the Pope says is such a contrast to so much of the political talk we hear these days.
Oh, I think it's very striking. I think that, there are some folks I've seen commenting on the Pope's visit who would like to see sharper rhetoric from him. But I think that he said some very strong things, but he said them in a gentle and approaching way, inviting way. And I think that's just a marked contrast from our political season right now.
Emma, you want to weigh in on that as well?
Absolutely. I think that one of the most distinctive things about Francis in the United States is that he's coming here as a pastor and as a theologian. And it's not often that the members of Congress will have to sit and listen to someone who's really speaking from a point of view that stems from the gospel. I think it's a really interesting time for the United States to step back away from some of the political rhetoric that you're pointing to and think about some of these deeper issues and deeper philosophical questions, which Pope Francis is focusing on.
I read, and I'm sure Emma and you, Kevin, have read as well, that the Pope he's a Republican, he's a Democrat, he's a liberal, he's a conservative. Emma, you have written about this. You've saying he's a pastor, he's a priest.
Yes, I think it is a strong temptation and an understandable one to try to interpret Francis through the left-right political spectrum in the United States. But ultimately, that's not that helpful. This pope is not from the United States. In fact, he's never even been here before now. And he is coming from a perspective as a global pastor who is trying to speak to the world's issues and problems. And his views don't really line up neatly with the spectrum from Democrat to Republican.
Let me turn to you, Kevin. And I mean, I'd be curious, actually, what you make of that analysis. And it feels sort of easy to analyze the Pope's words through an American political lens.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that they're not political. I think they are very political. But I do think that Emma is exactly right to say that they don't fit neatly into our political spectrum. I think that Catholic social teaching for a century really has seemed to some to be progressive or too progressive, depending on your point of view, on economic issues, and to some too conservative on some social issues. But they all make sense within the context of the theology and political vision that has sort of come forth from Catholic social teaching.
But it's hard not to take away a pretty powerful message that the Pope, after speaking to a joint session of Congress yesterday, Kevin, went and broke bread with homeless people, with people who have been let out of prison. I mean, these are people that barely get mentioned, and if they do, are often mentioned with a great deal of scorn in this country.
So that's absolutely so. You know, I think that one of the most interesting things we've learned about Francis is that some of his most prophetic gestures are just that. They're gestures. They're actions. They're where he breaks from his schedule. That's when we see him really sort of showing his pastoral face, but also his critique, I think, you know, to say to the members, sitting members of Congress and the Senate, sorry, we don't really – we don't have time for you. I have another appointment. You know, that's a pretty striking thing.
And that's something you wrote about as well, Emma. That's what does it mean to lament the poor inside Panem? Pope Francis praises Dorothy Day and Thomas Burton before a Congress stacked with millionaires.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a little bit of a Sly Hunger Games reference
yes,
there.
Yes, exactly.
I caught that. Right.
But it was striking to me. I was at the speech yesterday, but it was such a striking thing that the Pope mentioned these two Catholic figures, Thomas Burton and Dorothy Day, who both in certain ways lived in solidarity with those who live on the fringes of society. Dorothy Day spent much of her life living among the working poor and the homeless and serving them in her various ministries. And Thomas Burton, of course, lived a life as a contemplative monk. And their lifestyles are strikingly different from those of the rich and the powerful who live here in Washington, D.C., and who the Pope was addressing. So I think the call here is one that's a little bit more challenging than what we might be first inclined to think. It's not just about making policies and laws that line up with eliminating poverty or helping the environment. It's actually about going out and encountering the poor and being with them. That is what the Pope is really talking about.
And Emma, he also mentioned in the same breath Martin Luther King Jr. and Abraham Lincoln.
Absolutely, which I think, as one commentator observed, shows that Pope Francis was really doing his homework. He had a great sort of thematic flow to his speech to Congress, calling out these four great American figures and speaking to their legacies in the United States. I was particularly struck by his passages on Martin Luther King and the dream for racial harmony that he set out. He spoke about this in the context of immigration and treating those who are different than us in the same way that we would treat people who we believe to be native-born Americans.
But do you think, Kevin, as you said, you know, it's hard not to take some of this as a, if not political statement, at least a statement to try to persuade people. Do you think he can persuade Congress, for instance, to address immigration reform, to be really prosaic about it?
You know, I don't think that anybody's going to walk out from that address to the joint session and say, oh, I must change my policy position. I don't think that's going to – I think what we've already seen is the liberal side and the conservative side scrambling to sort of claim what they can claim and distance themselves from what they want to distance themselves from. And so I don't know that will be the concrete effect. But Francis himself said, I want to speak to the whole nation through you. And I think that was very much in his mind, that his immediate audience was Congress, but his intended audience was the whole world, and specifically the entire country.
Kevin, do you think he is, or what he says is a kind of projective test, which it, you know, people sort of see in him what they want to see about him?
Well, that's an interesting thought. I think that in some ways, yes. I mean, I think that we can see that some people on the left, on what we, you know, the American left, we would consider, you know, the progressive side of things. I think we've seen some people hope that we would see, you know, drastic changes in church teaching or on matters like sexuality, or and we haven't, and I would dare say we won't see a dramatic change in church teaching under Pope Francis. So I think that there has been a certain amount of projection in that direction too. And in a way, Francis invites it because of these dramatic gestures, you know, that are open to a certain kind of interpretation. It's as much what he does as what he says. But when he does something, you have to sort of figure out how to sort of place that.
Well, we are talking about the person that it seems the whole country's been talking about over the last couple of days, Pope Francis, of course, here in the United States, and he's spending the weekend here in Philadelphia. That's Kevin Hughes. He's a Catholic historical theologian at Villanova University, currently serves as chair of the Department of Humanities. Emma Green is with us as well, managing editor of TheAtlantic.com. She writes about religion, culture, and politics, and she's been writing a lot about Pope Francis's visit to the United States. And to join our conversation, any questions or comments that you might have or impressions of the Pope, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Emma, he did disappoint numbers of victims of the clergy abuse scandal, feeling that he wasn't tough enough in talking to some of the bishops. He didn't meet with dissidents in Cuba when he went to that country and met with Fidel Castro and, of course, Raul Castro as well. What has he done, or what is his position or his take on the clergy abuse scandal?
You know, I think this is an interesting question. This has obviously been a focus of the American press in particular, particularly because the American press led the way on exposing this story several years ago when it first started breaking. There have been hints from a Vatican spokesperson that there may still be a meeting to come with victims of sexual abuse. Obviously, this would not be on the Pope's public schedule, nor probably would reporters know about it until after it happened. But last night in a briefing with reporters, people reported that the Vatican spokesperson said that the Pope really was thinking of the sexual abuse victims and may or may not, you know, sort of speak on that issue. So there's still some change yet to come, I think. Hard to tell, but there may be action there.
Kevin, is there more you think this Pope should do?
Well, I think that the strongest rhetoric that we've seen from the Pope in this visit has been in his address to the bishops, I think. And it wasn't specifically on this question of the clerical abuse crisis, but he had very strong words for the bishops about how they should conduct their pastoral practice. And it was really putting the woundedness of the people of God sort of in the forefront. And I think he had this very much in mind in those words.
I'm curious, too, as well, about the canonization of Father Junipero Serra?
Junipero Serra,
yeah. Who is he, Kevin?
Junipero Serra was a Franciscan priest and a missionary that established a series of missions throughout the Western states during the Spanish conquest of the New World. And, you know, he's a controversial figure because the question is, you know, how did Junipero respond to native peoples? Was there any kind of coercion or cooperation with conquistadores? You know, was there a sort of collusion with imperial force and conquest, or was this spreading the good news? But I think that Pope Francis really wants to put front and center. First of all, I think he delights in a Latino saint in the New World, you know, as a Latin American pope. But I think that he also really wants to put this on the table, that the message of the gospel as proclaimed to the world is what we need to focus on.
Emma, some Native Americans have not been happy about this, feeling that it wasn't – that Christianity, in a sense, was imposed on them.
Yes, absolutely. There's been some controversy over the canonization of Junipero Serra, and it's largely been raised by Native peoples who either had relatives who had been part of this missionary conversion movement, or who were part of tribes that were in the California area that had been affected by the missionary movement of the mid-18th and early 19th centuries. However, I think there's a lot of complexity here. So it's definitely easy to look at someone like Junipero Serra and view him as a little bit of a cultural imperialist, to see him as someone who came into a native population and tried to change it fundamentally. But I think there is exactly the point that was being made before, which is that the Pope is trying to highlight the gospel and the missionary movement that raises the gospel, even now, even today, in missionary movements around the world. And Junipero Serra was doing that work. It's an interesting actual side note that the Archbishop of Philadelphia, Archbishop Chaput, is actually of Native American descent. So he is someone who is a Native American Catholic. And he said that some of these ritual practices of Native Americans has been incorporated into his own faith practice. So there's more complexity here than just Native Americans versus Catholics.
Kevin, I was talking with one of our reporters talking about events in Philadelphia this weekend, and the Pope will be speaking tomorrow in front of Independence Hall. And apparently the issue that he'll be talking about, and he has referenced this before, is immigration. Why is that so important to this Pope?
Well, he said a number of times, you know, I am the son of immigrants, and so are you. And so I think he's really taking significant or taking significant notice and taking advantage of the fact that he, like so many of us, find ourselves on this side of the world because of a phenomenon of immigration. And so he has the power to say we need to attend to immigrants because we are immigrants ourselves. And in that, he's hitting that sort of American note, South American and North American note, but he's also invoking a biblical theme. You know, in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew Bible, God says to the people Israel, you must welcome the stranger because you were strangers yourself. And so he's connecting the phenomenon that we have of immigration now to this welcoming the stranger in the biblical tradition.
The very opposite, Emma, of what someone like Donald Trump has been talking about when it comes to immigrants or coming in from Mexico, for instance.
Absolutely. I would say that the rhetoric here is stark, almost to the point of satirical, in terms of the orientation of someone like Donald Trump and the orientation of Pope Francis. We actually were joking to ourselves yesterday after the congressional speech that, and this is the headline we end up going with, was Pope Francis says to Congress, make America great again, which of course is Trump's tagline. But when the Pope says it, he says it in a very different way. He believes that the greatness of the United States is in offering freedom and the ability to dream, as he said during his speech to Congress, to all peoples, to peoples who were born here, but also those who are at the margins of society, those who are immigrants, those who are coming from places of crisis. And so the two figures stand very, very much at opposite ends of worldviews. And so it's almost a little ridiculous to put them into conversation with one another.
Hard sometimes, which is the onion headline,
right?
When it comes to things like that. You know, we have to take a very short break. Yeah, hold on, just because we have to take a short break. We'll get back to our conversation. And we are talking about Pope Francis. He is speaking right now. I can see on my TV screen at the United Nations. Obviously spoke yesterday at a joint session of the U.S. Congress. He will be in Philadelphia this weekend. Talking with Kevin Hughes from Villanova University, Emma Green from theatlantic.com. And we want to hear from you, 1-888-477-9499. And after the short break, I do want to talk about the fact that while people may love the Pope, while Catholics may love the Pope, do they love their church? Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with Emma Green, managing editor of TheAtlantic.com. She's been writing about Pope Francis's visit to the U.S. She writes about religion, culture, and politics. Kevin Hughes is a Catholic historical theologian at Villanova University, chair of the Department of Humanities, author of several books as well looks like the Catholic Church, church history, constructing Antichrist. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. I put that question out there, Kevin, only because I was reading a pretty long article in the New York Times talking about the Catholic Church having lost members of all ages, alienated by the sexual abuse scandals, the exclusion of women and married men from the priesthood, the rejection of gay relationships and birth control, the denial of communion to Catholics who have divorced and remarried without annulment. Is there sort of a disconnect between the affection Catholics may feel for their Pope and how they feel about their church?
You know, I think that there is certainly a decline in church attendance and in terms of a certain sense of affiliation among American Catholics. Whether that's a sort of cause or effect of the sort of dissonance on some of the issues that you mentioned is really an open question, because I think in many ways the exodus happened and the abuse crisis sort of accelerated it or capped it off. I think that things had happened before that. And for generations now, people have been talking about, Pope Benedict used to speak about, we're looking ahead to a church that will be smaller and more tightly knit. The upside would be a little more tightly knit. The downside would be that it's going to be smaller. So this is part of a general trend, both in Europe and in the United States. I do think it's very interesting to think about what effects the popularity of Francis will have on church attendance and among American Catholics. I think that the latest figures that I've seen don't suggest that it's had a significant impact yet, but these things do take some time, and I think we may see some people returning with greater enthusiasm, but it's not obvious that that will happen. I think people like the Pope. It's easier to like the Pope than it is to show up and, and live the life of discipleship every day. Yeah.
How do you see it, Emma?
You know, I think there are a few key areas where American Catholics have kind of a different worldview than the church does, and certainly than Pope Francis does, and particularly on issues that have to do with family life, sexuality, even abortion and contraception. Americans tend to deviate pretty strongly from the church and from Pope Francis. Now, there's a significant difference here between those who attend Mass on a weekly basis and those who affiliate with the Catholicism but aren't necessarily as regularly attending. When social organizations like Pew or the Public Religion Research Institute do surveys on this, they see marked differences between those groups. But still, overall, there are differences in the American population in terms of its conservatism, and generally that means more openness towards homosexuality, people living with partners of the same sex, gay couples adopting, using birth control, cohabitating with a spouse who, or with a partner who you're not married to. And these are issues that the church is pretty firm on. So I would imagine that, if anything, what Pope Francis will do and what he seems to have done while he's in the United States is create a sense of excitement around Catholicism, create a sense that there actually is vibrancy in the church, there actually is connection between church leaders and contemporary Americans. But in terms of how they continue living their lives and even how they go to church, I don't know what the effect will be.
Well, that's interesting. And also interesting that I do want to get to some callers, Kevin. He is born in South America, in Argentina. And again, going back to this article that I read in the New York Times, when you look at Catholics in the United States, you see growing among Latinos, among Africans that come to this country as well, looking at some of the immigrant populations, perhaps a decline here in the Northeast, but seeing an increase in the West and in the South.
I think that's absolutely so. You know, Philip Jenkins wrote a book a while years ago now that talked about the Christendom to come, and where he said, look, the center of gravity in Christianity in general, and certainly in the Catholic Church in particular, is really shifting to Latin America and to Africa and to Asia. And the assumption that we've had for so long that that the sort of North American European corridor was the sort of heart and soul of things, it's just not borne out by the numbers right now.
Let me get some callers in. And again, I'm particularly interested in hearing from some of the Catholics in our audience. You can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Interested in your perspective on Pope Francis, on your church as well. And again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We have George from, looks like Abington, joining us on Radio Times. Hi, George. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that when I watched the Pope's speech to Congress, it seemed like there's many more things for liberals, Catholics and otherwise, like myself, to cheer about than people on the right might cheer about.
You know, I hate to do this to you, George, because you've been waiting so patiently on the phone, but we have a really terrible phone line. But I think what I'm hearing him say, and Emma, perhaps I'll put this to you, is that the words that at least George heard coming from the Pope seem to appeal more to liberals / Democrats than to Republicans. We're kind of back where we started in our conversation. But again, is there a way to see that or not?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. And so the first question would be, is Pope Francis a Democrat or a Republican? And I would say definitively to that, no. But then the second question is, do Pope Francis's concerns tend to resonate more or line up with more the concerns of American Republicans or American Democrats? And I would say, on the whole, the issues that he tends to elevate tend to be issues that Democrats champion. So poverty reduction through government assistance, care for the environment, again, through government intervention, issues like immigration, which Francis is very much a proponent of sort of welcoming immigrants and migrants. But, you know, I wouldn't say that it really is right to think of Francis as only someone who speaks to a liberal base. For example, when he was at the White House, he spoke about religious liberty, and later that day, he made a stop off to visit the Little Sisters of the Poor, who are the nuns challenging the contraception mandate of the Affordable Care Act. So, you know, I think when Catholics listen to Pope Francis, what they should be listening for is theology, for gospel, for the rootedness of the issues that he's talking about. Jesus preaches about going out to speak with the least of these. And I think that for American Republicans and American Democrats, that's something that Christians really, really care about.
Well, Kevin, he talked about, we're back in Congress now, but about the sanctity of life at, quote, every stage of its development, which, of course, would include in utero and I guess the death penalty as well.
That's right. And I think that the heart of Catholic teaching has always been as Pope John Paul II said in his The Gospel of Life, his encyclical letter, he said, you know, the quality of a nation will be known by the way it takes care of the weakest of its members. And that has always been the root principle that's at the heart of both the concern about the poor and concern about abortion, euthanasia, and some of these other issues. And so there you have left and right issues, so to speak, all connected by a common theme. I think it's fair to say that Pope Francis really does elevate concerns like immigration and the environmental concerns that he's spoken often about. But he never leaves out these questions of religious liberty, questions of abortion and, those family life. You know, he talked about family life being attacked at its very core, and that was near the end of the speech. It was a sort of but he didn't sort of say, you know, same-sex marriage. He didn't say the words, and I think that's what a certain kind of conservative critic is worried about.
The fact that he wasn't more explicit talking about gay marriage, for instance, you're saying, Kevin.
Exactly. I think that that some people who have been critical of what the Pope said would have liked to have heard kind of equal time for those, and they were very much present in there, and they're part of the same way of thinking that's very much at the heart of who Pope Francis is. But I think that he spent more time and was more explicit about things like immigration and environmental concerns.
Let me get Jane from Wynwood to join our conversation. Jane, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have been really following this week, and I'm a disillusioned Catholic, but I still belong to the church. I think I'm loyal, but I pick and choose. This man is authentic. That's a word they've been using about him, and where have they been keeping him? I read the other day about Archbishop Chaput, where he said, he didn't use the word comply, but if we don't do everything that's established by the church, we don't belong in the Catholic faith. And that really burned me up, and I don't agree. And what I see the Pope reaching out, or stressing reaching out to people. Not everybody has a perfect marriage. There's divorce. Why can't they go to communion? All these, we're pushing people away. The youth are leaving. I heard there were 3 million people who left the Catholic Church, probably a lot more in the country. But I think this man is speaking the truth and saying what needs to be done, and I embrace him. I think he's right on and a person that we need. I think I'm kind of a happier Catholic this week because of him. I think he's wonderful. So, okay.
No, Jane, I wanted to make sure you had a chance to get to the end of your sentence. No, I really appreciate the call to Radio Times, and I think you raise a number of really important points. And Kevin, she's, you know, you can hear it in her voice. She's a disillusioned Catholic. She sounds like she wants to practice her faith, but she finds it hard sometimes.
Yeah, I think Pope Francis really wants to be a voice of love and compassion, and he's used the word a lot this visit, dialogue, and he really wants to present the face of joy and mercy to the world, and that includes to Catholics and where meet them where they are. I do think that Pope Francis does share with Archbishop Chaput a sense that there is a kind of integrity to the Christian faith, to Catholic teaching, that it all sort of holds together, and it's very difficult to pick and choose. But Pope Francis has decided that the way to draw someone into that integral teaching is through joy and through mercy and through compassion. And so those are the approaches that he's really favored.
And Emma, Jane talked about, you know, not everyone has a perfect marriage, and the Pope has talked about annulment, and sort of looks like, I don't know if how much that changes actual, you know, in practice or even in doctrine, but
changing this notion about what happens to Catholics who divorce, for instance.
Yeah, I think the major change with Pope Francis has been a pastoral change, meaning that he's really shifted the tone and instructed bishops and other leaders within the church to be reaching out to people in different ways, trying to reach them where they are. So the reforms that he's made on annulments, this happened a few weeks ago, and there may be more reforms to come in the coming weeks, which basically made it less bureaucratic for certain couples to try to get a formal annulment within the Catholic Church. Obviously, divorce is prohibited, but there are ways, if your marriage is disordered, as a Catholic theologian would say, to get the church to issue an annulment. Pope Francis made that process a little bit easier, but in doing so, he places more of a burden on priests and bishops to reach out to Catholics and try to reach them where they are, try to really minister to them.
But is he being, Kevin, is he just being more practical, which is that if you're going to keep your numbers up, you have to reach out to people who have left your church?
Well, I mean, I think you might say something similar to that, but you'd say it in the way that Francis would prefer. If you have good news to spread, you need to spread it with joy. You know, who believes good news from a sourpuss, he says, right, in one of his writings? You know, So if you have good news, you need to spread it as good news. You know, there are hard things that come with that message, but let's not forget, it is good.
Let me get another caller. Jane, thanks for the call to Radio Times. It looks like we have Abby now from, or Shane now. Is it Shane? Shane from Mullica Hill. Shane, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So a theme that I've been noticing over the last few speeches, is Pope Francis's kind of focus not necessarily on Catholicism, but on some of the social issues. And something that, you know, I'm curious about is I wonder if he's kind of pushing towards some of the non-denominational Christian faith to bridge this gap, to start focusing on the issues such as, you know, the homeless or the poor.
Shane, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Emma, do you have any thoughts about that?
I think that reaching out to those who are on the margins is absolutely the number one concern of this Pope. He talks about reaching the least of these, reaching those who live on the margins consistently, constantly. And this was shown by his actions, as you point out. When he spoke to Congress, he went and spoke to this crowd full of powerful and wealthy people, and then he went to go have lunch with the homeless. I think this is absolutely an elevation of a specific aspect of the Gospels, which is Jesus' teachings that you need to go out and minister to those who are the prostitutes, those who have been the tax collectors, those who have been on the edges of society, whose society is tossed out. And that probably appeals to a certain subset. But something else in your question really resonated as well, which is twice now he has said to large audiences of people, "For those of you who can't pray, please wish me well." So he always asks people to pray for him, but he's asked also for those who don't pray to wish him well, which I think is an interesting other signal that he's trying to reach out to this broader audience of people who might not believe the same way that he does.
Well, we are just about out of time. Kevin, you're at Villanova. Are you going to be coming into the city this weekend?
I'm coming in on Sunday. Yeah, I'll be there for the Mass.
For the Mass. Well, my thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Kevin Hughes, thanks so much.
No, you're quite welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome. And he's a Catholic historical theologian at Villanova University, chair of the Department of Humanities. Emma Green, thank you very much as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And she's managing editor of TheAtlantic.com, writes about religion, culture, and politics, and she's been writing a lot about Pope Francis. I just saw on the news that John Boehner has resigned as Speaker of the House. So do stay with WHYY for more information about that breaking news. Also go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program, including how to download podcasts of the show. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us in this hour of Radio Times.